listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And with us today, Natalia Munoz, host of Vaya con Munoz on WHMP, and Matt Szafranski, editor of Western Mass Politics and Insight. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having me.
Hi.
This week on Beacon Hill, the Massachusetts House and Senate passed separate criminal justice bills. The two pieces of legislation are similar in a number of ways, including doing away with mandatory minimum sentences for some drug crimes, restricting how solitary confinement is used, and beefing up laws against fentanyl trafficking. But there are some key differences, too, that will need to be worked out in the conference committee process, raising the age someone can be tried in juvenile court, changes to the statutory rape laws, and exactly which mandatory minimums to repeal. Natalia, between these two bills, did lawmakers do enough to change the criminal justice system in Massachusetts?
I think they started a very good conversation, and I was happy to see that a lot of DAs from Massachusetts also are weighing in. This is how you create a bill. You have debates, you have conversations, you have different points of view, and it's all done with respect, and this is what democracy is about. Good.
Matt, criminal justice reform is something that's been talked about for a while. Do you think lawmakers will be able to hammer out their differences in a timely fashion, given some of the disagreements that have taken place between the two chambers lately?
Well, I think they have one advantage this time around, which is that they got both their bills through before the formal session ended this past Wednesday. So informal negotiations can go on well until they come back formally in January or February. They don't need to wait to be in session. They have two separate bills they can talk about. I'm sure the conference committee either is appointed or will be appointed or will formally talk about this. So at least we will have, you know, the process moving forward. Hopefully this will not be one of those bills that gets ground out before the end of the formal session July 31st.
And speaking of criminal justice and law enforcement, this week Governor Charlie Baker named Kerry Gilpin of Hamden to run the state police. This comes after the top two leaders of the department, Richard McEwen and Francis Hughes, retired amid a report editing scandal. McEwen acknowledged he ordered changes in the arrest report of a daughter of a judge, removing some unflattering details. Here's Baker.
Look, the colonel made very clear that he initiated this. We also made very clear we thought it was a mistake. We also made very clear that the state police needs to clean up and make more explicit its policies and protocols associated with editing arrest reports.
Matt, certainly this controversy does not make the state police look very good. Is there more that Baker needs to do here? And could this become an issue in next year's election if he ends up running? He hasn't formally announced yet.
Well, I mean, I think the worst kept secret on Beacon Hill is that Charlie Baker's running for re-election. But I think it can be a problem. And I think it really depends on how much Democrats and how much, frankly, the media, particularly the Boston area media, no offense to all of us out here, but are prepared to start challenging the administration. You know, this is the second time an agency under Baker has, frankly, run wild. He promised good management. He promised better management than what Deval Patrick was doing for 8 years. And this is the second time, you know, first there was the Department of Environmental and Energy Affairs, which had problems. It affected a state Senate race out here last year. And now the state police, which is a part of an executive office of public safety, is having problems. It's very, very hard for me to think this doesn't go further up past the state police into an executive civilian agency.
Natalia, as far as the appointment of Kerry Gilpin goes, she's the second woman named to the position and is also the second person in the last decade with Western Mass roots named to head the state police. What do you think about naming Kerry Gilpin to head the state police?
I am not provincial about appointments. From what I've read, she seems like somebody who's prepared to do it. I am glad that she's a woman. I think there need to be more women in positions of authority everywhere, not just in Massachusetts, but everywhere. And regarding what you said earlier, Matt, about Baker having some problems with some of his appointees, I also think at the same time that he's responding well to this second crisis. And those two, the deputy superintendent and the superintendent, they're resigning. He has somebody in who has apparently a sterling reputation to take over and will bring a new culture of accountability to the state police.
Hopefully we will have some of that accountability be made public. They're already making noises about how, well, we've taken care of this and, you know, we're not going to, you know, embarrass anybody. Even some, you know, Beacon Hill Democrats are talking about that. And this is, you know, if the shoe were on the other foot, if this was a Democratic governor right now, you know that the minority Republicans would rightly be calling for transparency on this. And I think it's something that we should demand.
Well, that's the double standard of Republicans and Democrats. The Republicans can get away with everything, and the Democrats, not so much.
Moving along, recovery efforts are continuing in Puerto Rico. About two months after Hurricane Maria caused severe damage on the island, people from there are coming to parts of Massachusetts, including Springfield and Holyoke, in an attempt to resettle. There are some area colleges offering free tuition to a few students from the island. And unfortunately, there have been stories, too, about some people around here receiving bad news about relatives who have died as a result of Maria. Natalia, you have very strong ties to Puerto Rico. Is this region, our region here in Western Massachusetts, responding appropriately to the disaster, or is there more that we should be or could be doing?
I don't know, Adam, because we could say here in Massachusetts, well, let's send 1,000 people, doctors and other healthcare professionals and engineers to Puerto Rico. But if the Puerto Rican government is not prepared to receive them, and that has happened in the past, in our recent past, with the after effects of Hurricane Maria, then, you know, I think it's all too easy to say we should be doing more, but can they accept more? Is there a place to put all these people? Is there a plan? Puerto Rico is still inventing the plan on how to deal with this catastrophe.
Matt, to kind of follow on what Natalia just said, there are some folks from the Massachusetts state government that have been going down there on a fairly regular basis, some people from the Emergency Management Agency. There are also some folks from the National Guard. How about the role of states in national emergencies like this?
Well, the cooperation among states, and for all intents and purposes, people should be treating Puerto Rico as if it were a state in this circumstance. It's a separate, semi-sovereign entity, you know, within the United States. There's a long tradition of that. You see that. I remember, you know, 6 years ago when we had that winter snowstorm, people sent electrical crews from all over the country to repair electrical equipment out here. Obviously, Puerto Rico has a much more severe problem down there. So this is a good thing, whether it is, you know, electrical engineers or it is doctors, et cetera. It's an appropriate role. I'm not sure that every state has offered as much as it could. And Natalia makes a great point. Puerto Rico may not be able to accept all of it, but not every state has necessarily offered all that it can either.
Finally, as we do from time to time, we'd like to ask our panelists about stories from our region that maybe haven't been reported on as much as they should have or could have. So, Natalia, I'll let you have the first crack at this. What's a story from around here that we should be hearing more about?
Well, the national story is on sexual harassment. I would like to see the local media do stories on sexual harassment. Ask the chiefs of universities, of healthcare institutions, program directors, get their opinion on sexual harassment.
Matt?
This delay in a bond for Riverfront Park in Springfield, I mean, it's going to pass. I mean, there's really just, you know, there's no question about it. But City Council President Orlando Ramos essentially delayed it through a procedural tactic. This is interesting, I think, because it's a good way that shows how the City Council tries to work and get its way on certain things or certain city councilors do. So it's less about the substance of the issue itself and more about this is how your city government works.
All right, Matt Szafranski of Western Mass Politics and Insight and Natalia Munoz, host of Via Con Munoz, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. Please note we'll be taking next week off for the Thanksgiving long weekend, but we'll be back on December 1st with a new edition. And in the meantime, you can go to nepr.net/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts to catch up on past episodes of the shortlist. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.